You think you're any better?
I wasn't ever president of the New Republic, Han pointed out. Besides, one of us has to go.
Why? Leia demanded, a dull ache around her heart. Han had done a lot of crazy things in his life, but walking into the heart of the Empire was beyond even his old smuggler's rashness. The New Republic has other people they could send.
Yeah, but which ones can we trust? Han asked. Besides, we don't have time to go back and hunt up a team. The whole New Republic's balanced on a blade edge right now.
But you can't go alone, Leia insisted. And don't forget, I'm a Jedi. Any trouble you get into...
We've got company, one of the clones announced suddenly, pointing.
Leia looked. Just clearing the distant hills, a low-flying craft was burning through the air toward them. Carib, you'd better get the others into the cave, she told him, running through her Jedi sensory enhancement techniques and squinting at the approaching vehicle. Better yet, you'd better all go. That looks like our Nogri Guard's cross shuttle.
Too late,
Carib said, his eyes on the approaching vehicle as he gestured the others to stay where they were.
If there are Nogri in there, they already have us under surveillance. Trying to slip out of sight now would just make things worse.
The shuttle was almost to them, skimming low over the tall grain and showing no sign of stopping. Han made an unintelligible noise in the back of his throat, and even Leia felt a twinge of uncertainty. It looked like a cross shuttle, but at the speed it was making, that was impossible to confirm. If it was instead a follow-up attack... And then, at almost the last second, the craft braked hard, coming to a mid-air halt. A short gray figure dropped out of the passenger side door, and the shuttle shot off again, swinging high over the cave and hills before circling back toward the group gathered around the Falcon.
Khonsa,
Barkimk said gravely, recovering his balance quickly after his 3-meter drop and marching toward them. He had no visible weapons, but with a Nogri that didn't mean a lot.
The Vakrik defense monitor said that a ship had come under attack and surmised it was yours. We are pleased to find you uninjured.
Thank you, Barkimk, Leia said, keeping her voice as gravely unemotional as his. What he really wanted to do, she knew, was to express his deep shame and self-loathing that he and Sokasak hadn't been there to help protect them from the attack. But he would never reveal even a hint of such feelings in front of strangers.
We appreciate your concern, she added. As you see, we were able to land safely among friends.
Yes,
the Nogri said, his eyes measuring the group with a single well-trained glance.
I presume you will now be...
His voice faltered just slightly.
Returning with us?
An almost undetectable slip, but for Leia it was enough.
No, it's all right,
she said quickly, taking a step toward Carib.
They're not going to hurt us.
You do not understand,
Barkimk snarled. There was contempt suddenly in his voice, and a blaster just as suddenly in his hand.
They are Imperial clones.
They're clones, yes, Leia said. But they're on our side now.
Barkimk spat.
They are Imperials.
So were the Nogri ones,
Carib said quietly. Barkimk's blaster twitched toward him, his large black eyes flashing. Any mention of their long servitude to the Empire by outsiders was considered a deadly insult.
No,
Leia said firmly, reaching out with the Force to turn the blaster muzzle aside.
They saved our lives, and they've asked for sanctuary.
You may trust them as you choose, Counselor,
Barkimk said darkly.
But I do not.
But nevertheless, the blaster disappeared.
There was an urgent transmission from Coruscant for you shortly after you departed, Patrick Major,
the Nogri said, waving a stand-down signal toward his partner in the circling shuttle.
Did you receive it?
No,
Leia said, frowning. She hadn't realized the Nogri were able to tap into their private communications.
It probably came in while we were being jammed. Did you get a copy?
Shaka-Shak will bring it,
Bark Kimsk said, nodding his head fractionally toward the shuttle now landing off to the side.
We, of course, did not attempt to decrypt it.
Which didn't necessarily mean they couldn't do so if they'd wanted to.
Have him bring it to the Falcon, please,
she instructed.
I'll go get the decrypt ready. You wait here with Han and help Carib and the others get repairs organized.
10 minutes later, seated at the Falcon's game table as Sokasak stood watchful guard between her and the hatchway, she slid the data card into her data pad. The message was short and very much to the point. Leia, this is General Bel Iblis. I have just received some vital information and urgently need to talk to you. Please stay on Pakrik Minor. I'll be arriving there in 3 days and will meet you at the North Barris spaceport. Please treat this communication with the utmost security. Leia frowned, the skin on the back of her neck tingling. What in the worlds could Bel Iblis have found that he would need to come all the way out here? And why her, of all people? There was the clank of boots on metal, and she looked up to see Han stride past Sokasak.
Looks pretty straightforward, I guess, he reported, sliding into the seat beside her. The head droid thinks they can have her back together in a couple of days. So what's this big important message?
Wordlessly, Leia handed over the data pad. Han read it, his forehead wrinkling as he did so.
This is interesting, he declared, setting down the data pad. How did Bel Iblis know we were here?
Gaverson must have told him,
Leia said.
He's the only one who knew we were coming to Pakrik Minor after the conference was over.
Yeah, well, those three Corleers knew it too,
Han said pointedly, swiveling the data pad around to look at the message again.
How sure are you that this is really from Bel Iblis?
About as sure as it's possible to be,
Leia said.
It has his signature code, plus the bridge break confirmation.
That's what, that crypt-embedded code trick Kent came up with a couple of months ago?
That's the one,
Leia said.
I don't think the Imperials even know the codes are in there, let alone have a way to access or duplicate them.
Unless Kent was using the same trick back when he was still working for Card,
Han mused, rubbing his chin.
Could be the Imperials picked up on it then.
No, Bel Iblis asked him that when he first proposed the technique,
Leia said.
Gent said it was something he just developed.
Han read the message again.
No idea what this is about?
None, Leia said. I guess we'll find out in a couple of days.
Well, you'll find out anyway,
Han said.
Carib and I'll be long gone by then.
Leia took a deep breath, the ache returning abruptly to her chest. Han.
No argument, hun,
Han said quietly, reaching over to take her hand.
I don't like it either. But if we don't get this stopped, everything's gonna go up in smoke. You know that better than I do.
We don't know that,
Leia argued.
We've got the New Republic government and Luke's Jedi students to help hold things together. If it comes to civil war, we can force the Bothans to pay whatever reparations are necessary, even if it winds up wrecking their economy.
You really think the Diamala will let Gavrasim force them into that kind of self-destruction?
Han countered.
Not to mention the Mon Cals, the Sifkris, and whoever else has lined up on the Bothan side since yesterday. Come on. We didn't win the war with wishful thinking.
Well, then what about Card?
Leia asked, trying one last time.
What about him?
Han asked.
Just because he's gone out looking for a copy of the Ka'amas document doesn't mean he's going to find it. Matter of fact, he didn't seem too confident about it himself. If he had, he would have asked for half the payment up front.
Leia glared at him. I'm being serious.
So am I, Han said, squeezing her hand. You think I want to go walking into the middle of the Empire? Look, you can talk all you want about holding things together, but if the New Republic blows, You and Gaverson and all the Jedi in Luke's school aren't going to be able to put it back together. And if that happens, what kind of life are Jason and Jaina and Anakin going to have? Or Chewie's cubs? Or Kraken's grandkids? Or anyone else? I don't like it any better than you do. But it's got to be done.
Leia took a deep breath, stretching out to the Force. No, she didn't like it at all. But at the same time, paradoxically, it somehow felt right. Not pleasant, certainly not safe, but right. "You aren't going alone, are you?" she sighed. "I mean, someone besides Carib?"
"Yeah, I've got someone in mind,"
Han said, his voice an odd mixture of relief and regret. Relief, she suspected, because his Jedi wife wasn't going to insist he not go. Regret, for exactly the same reason. Leia managed to smile.
"Lando?"
"How'd you guess?"
Han said, managing an answering smile.
"Yeah, him and a couple others."
He half turned to look at Sakasak.
"Not you, in case you were going to ask."
"I want advice, you reconsider," Sakasak said. "A Nogri guard disguised as your slaves could be unobtrusive, even on an Imperial world."
His eyes flicked to Leia.
"We have already failed you twice, Lady Vader. First on Batawee, and now here. We could not endure the shame and disgrace of a third such failure."
"Disgrace isn't going to matter much if you get us picked up 10 steps off the ramp,"
Han pointed out.
"Sorry, but Lando and me can do this ourselves. You just keep an eye on Leia, all right?"
"Do not fear,"
Sakasak said, a dark menace in his voice.
"We will."
Under the table, Leia caught Han's hand.
"So much for our little vacation," she said,
forcing a smile that probably looked as unconvincing as it felt. The look that flickered across Han's face made her wish she hadn't said that.
"I'm sorry, Leia,"
he said in a low voice.
"We never seem to get a break from all this, do we?"
"Not very often,"
she agreed with a sigh.
"If I'd realized at the beginning how much all of this was going to cost, I don't know."
"I do," Han said. "You'd have died on Alderaan. Palpatine would still be running the Empire, and I'd still be shipping spice for slime tails like Jabba. All that by itself makes it worth it."
"You're right,"
Leia said, feeling slightly ashamed of her moment of self-pity.
"When were you and Carib planning to leave?"
"Well, let's see,"
Han said, consideringly, an unexpected glint of roguishness touching the somber tone of his emotions.
"I've got to get a transmission across to Lando, and Carib's got to roll their freighter out and run a check on it. And he's a family man, too, so he's going to need time to say goodbye to his wife and kids. So let's say, tomorrow morning."
Translation? He told Carib they weren't leaving till morning, with whatever excuses he needed to make it stick.
"Thank you,"
she said, quietly squeezing his hand and trying the smile again. It felt much better this time.
"It's not what I was looking for," Han said. "But I guess it's better than nothing."
"Much better,"
she assured him.
"But do you think all these crises can wait an extra night?"
"I don't know,"
Han said, sliding out of his seat and offering her his arm in one of those old royal Alderaanian gestures he too rarely used.
"But I guess they'll have to."
Chapter 9. Outside the curved transparasteel canopy came one last burst of bubbles from the blue-veined rock formation rising from the ocean floor. As if that had been a signal, the blaze lights illuminating the area began to dim. The quiet buzz of conversation in the observation gallery stopped in anticipation. Standing against the back wall, Lando Calrissian smiled in some private anticipation of his own. When he and Tendra Rassant had first proposed this undersea mining operation, her family had been less than enthusiastic. But they had been openly critical of his idea to add an observation gallery so that paying customers could watch. Ridiculous, they had said. No one pays good money to watch miners mining. Even aquatic miners in the admittedly unusual locale of the barn ocean floor. But Lando had insisted, and Tendra had backed him up, and the family's financiers had grudgingly forked over the extra money, which made it that much more of a pleasure to watch the packed galleries like this one waiting eagerly for the show. The blaze lights finished their fade, leaving the rock formation just barely visible as a dark shape against the slightly lighter seawater around it. Someone in the gallery murmured to a friend, and suddenly there was a single point of blue-green fire at one edge of the rock. The point grew rapidly, becoming a line, and then a pair of branches, and finally an arachnid web of light as the blue veins of Fracca ignited and burned. And then the sheets of yellow bubbles appeared, as the heat of the burning Fracca set off the tertium beneath it. And for perhaps the next 30 seconds, the entire formation was surrounded by a twisting fury of fire and light, like a living creature writhing in the silent agony of its death throes. And with a shower of multicolored sparks and one final flurry of bubbles, the formation collapsed into a pile of rocks. Someone gasped, and as the sparks and bubbles faded and the blaze lights began to come up again, there was a ripple of spontaneous applause. The gallery's own lights came back, and with a buzz of excited conversation, the audience began their exit back to the casino areas. Lando waited by the door as they filed out, smiling, accepting compliments, answering a scattering of questions covering the usual range of intelligent to banal. And as the last two Duros filed out, he reset the doorway for general admission. The miners were scheduled to collapse one more ore formation today, but until that time, the gallery would be open, free of charge, to anyone who wanted to come in and watch. He was just starting down the corridor toward the trellis room when his comlink beeped. Pulling it out, he thumbed it on.
Calrissian.
Transmission coming in on the surface, Link,
the voice of Chief Command Officer Donnerwin announced.
It's encrypted and marked private.
I'll take it in my office,
Lando told him, keying off the comlink and changing direction. Tendra, perhaps, calling to say she'd wrapped up her Corellian trip and was heading back to join him. Or maybe it was Senator Myatomia, or another Diamolan official, with news about the security arrangements he was hoping to make with them for his ore shipments. Either one would be welcome. Reaching his office, he sealed the door, dropped into his desk chair, and with twice the anticipation those gamblers back in the gallery had shown, he keyed the comm. It wasn't Tendra. It wasn't even Myatomia.
Hi, Lando,
Han said, an all-too-familiar half-smile on his face.
How are things going?
A lot better 2 minutes ago than they are now,
Lando told him, the anticipating popping like a bubble and settling into the pit of his stomach like a bad feeling.
I know that look. What do you want?
I need you to go on a little trip with me. Can you get away for a few days?
The feeling in Lando's stomach got a little colder.
No who me's? No what makes you think I want somethings?
No banter of any sort. Whatever was going on, Han was deadly serious about it.
That depends, he hedged. How dangerous is this little trip likely to be?
Again, there should have been some banter. There wasn't.
Could be pretty risky. Could be worse than that.
Lando grimaced.
Han, look, you have to understand.
I need you, Lando. We're on a tight schedule and I need someone I can trust. You've got the expertise I need. You know the people I need, and there's no one else I can get.
Han, I've got responsibilities here, Lando said. I've got a business to run.
Card had a business to run, too. He's not going to like it if you say no.
Lando shook his head in resignation. No, Card certainly wouldn't be happy if he passed on this. Not after Lando had single-handedly talked him into heading out to the Cathal sector to try to get an intact copy of the Ka-Moss document from the mysterious Georges Cardass. Whose ties to Card Lando still didn't understand. But that wasn't the point. The point was that Card hadn't wanted to confront Cardass, but he'd gone anyway. Now Han was calling the pot hand, and Lando was about 20 points shy of a 23.
No rat, he said. But only because of Card. Where and when?
Right now. You have the Lady Luck there?
On the surface, yes, Lando told him. I can take the next shuttle up and be there half an hour later. Who are these other people you said we need?
Your old admin pal, Lobot, for one,
Han said.
And that Verpine he was working with for a while. What was his name?
Mogid, Lando said, feeling his eyes narrowing. And this isn't what I think it is it?
It's probably worse. Lobot and Mogid still running that little slicer trick you once told me about?
I don't know if they still are, Lando said with a sigh. But I'm sure they still can. You haven't by any chance located...
He hesitated. Even with the transmission encrypted, he didn't want to say the name aloud. Obviously, neither did Han.
You mean the place we talked about at the Orowood?
The other said obliquely.
I think so, yeah. Get Lobot and Mogid, and meet me two systems coreward from where you didn't have any choice.
Lando smiled tightly.
They arrived right before you did.
The words echoed accusingly through his memory, as clearly as if it had happened yesterday.
I had no choice. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too,
Han had replied, as he and Leia, a squad of stormtroopers behind them, had walked forward into the private dining room on Cloud City to face Darth Vader.
Two systems coreward it is, he confirmed.
I'll be waiting.
The transmission ended. Lando leaned back in his seat, gazing unseeingly at the blank display.
The place we talked about at the Orowood.
They talked about several different places at that clandestine meeting. But only one of them could have gotten Han this riled up. Bastion, the latest site of the oft-moved Imperial capital, its location and name of its host planet, hand-sealed secrets. Probably one of the best defended worlds in the galaxy. Certainly the central focus of Imperial power. Most definitely a place where the names Han Solo and Lando Calrissian were rather less than admired. And one of the last places in the galaxy where a complete set of Imperial records would be stored. Records that might have the names and clans of the Bothans who had helped destroy the world of Ka-Moss half a century ago. Records that could end the increasingly violent argument about whether the entire Bothan species should pay the penalty for that handful of anonymous murderers. If they could find that crucial record and get out with it alive... He keyed the comm.
Donovan, send a transmission to Lobot at Dive Central, he ordered. Tell him to get himself and the Lady Luck prepped. We're going on a little trip.
For a moment, he debated ordering Lobot to contact Mogid. Decided against it. The Lady Luck had better encryption than the under-to-overcom. And the less information out there for snoopers to listen to, the better.
Then give me a seat on the next surface shuttle.
Acknowledged,
Donnerwin said, unfazed as always by this sudden change in his boss's plans.
The shuttle leaves in 20 minutes. Do you want me to hold it?
No, I can make it,
Lando told him, running a quick mental list. Everything he was likely to need was already aboard the Lady Luck, and barring any major disasters, the casino-slash-mining operation should be able to run itself for a while, at least until Tendra got back. A pang of guilt jabbed into him. After all he and Tendra had been through together, she had a right to know why he was dropping everything like this. especially if there was any chance at all he wouldn't be coming back. He swallowed, his mouth unexpectedly dry. He would come back, all right. Of course he would. Hadn't he flown right into the heart of the second Death Star and lived to tell about it? Sure he had. And he'd survived the destruction of Mount Tantus, and that Corellian unpleasantness, and everything in between. But he was older now, and wiser, with a business he really enjoyed, and a woman who, for possibly the first time in his life, he felt truly and honestly connected to. He didn't want to lose any of it. Certainly not by dying. But hey, there was nothing to worry about. He was going with Han. And Han was about the luckiest old scoundrel he'd ever known. They'd come back okay. Sure they would. Guaranteed.
Boss?
Lando blinked, snapping out of his private pep talk and focusing on Donnerwin again. What?
Will there be anything else?
No, Lando said, feeling slightly ridiculous. Just keep things running smoothly until Tendra gets back.
Donnerwin smiled.
Sure thing, boss. Have a good trip.
Thanks.
Lando keyed off the comm, and with a grimace, pushed back his chair and stood up. No, there was nothing foolish about a little healthy caution. It was far worse than that. It was age. Lando was starting to feel old. And he didn't like it. Not a bit. So fine. He would go ahead and take this little jaunt into the heart of the Empire. It would do him good. And might just save the New Republic on top of it. Sure. It would be just like old times. In her earphone came the sound of Calrissian's door opening and closing. And with a sigh, Caroli Doolin pulled the device out of her ear. Shasa, she murmured into the empty air. The words seemed to hang in front of her, there in the tiny utility closet. An old Mistral battle curse, but spoken now not with anger or combat rage, but a deep sadness. Her gamble had paid off, and now she was going to have to kill an old friend. With practiced fingers, she began disassembling the audio tap she'd put into Calrissian's office when she'd arrived here 40 hours ago. A flush of anger intruding on her dour mood. Anger at Talon Card for being so predictable. Anger at herself for anticipating his moves so precisely. Anger at Shaeta Ducal for putting her in this position in the first place. What in the ashes of Emberlyn had possessed Shaeta to defy the Eleven that way, she wondered. Loyalty, Shaeta had said up on that windswept rooftop. But that was clearly ridiculous. Mazik was a grubby little smuggler, nothing more, with no more claim on Shaeta's loyalty than any of the dozens of other employers she'd worked for over the years. True, this particular job had lasted longer than most, but no matter what Mazik might have thought, Shaeta had still been a Mistral Shadow Guard all that time, ultimately answerable only to the 11 elders of the people. So Shaeta had defied her orders, and as a result, a Mistral deal with a Hutt crime lord had gone sour, and the 11 were demanding Shaeta's head. All Mistral had been alerted to watch for her, and several teams had been sent specifically to hunt her down. And out of all that flurry of activity, it had been Caroli who had found her. Even now, 8 days later, the irony of it was still a bitter taste in Caroli's mouth. She hadn't worked with Shaeta for 20 years, yet had still managed to anticipate that Shaeta's next move would be in the direction of the New Republic hierarchy. Though whether to join up or sell out, Caroli still didn't know. She'd arrived on Coruscant just in time to see Shaeta leaving the Imperial City, and had tracked her to an apartment owned by the High Counselor Leia Organa Solo and her husband near the Minari Mountains. She might have taken Shaeta there. Certainly surprise would have been on her side. But the Solos were rumored to have a cadre of Nogri warriors around them at all times. And even given that Nogri combat skills were probably overrated, it would still be risky for a single Mistral to go up against them alone. So she had called for backup. But before they could arrive, Shada had left the building in the company of Talon Card. There again might have been her chance, but before she could do more than infiltrate into the inner landing bay, Organa Solo and her protocol droid had arrived with a pair of Nogri in tow. She and the droid had gone inside, the Nogri taking up positions at the outer hatchway. And when Organa Solo had left a few minutes later, it was without the droid. She'd collected her guards and left the landing bay. And then, to Caroli's chagrin, the wild card had immediately sealed up and taken off, leaving her too far from her own ship to have any hope of giving chase. The Eleven had been furious. So had the Mistral Hunter team, who had dropped everything to rush to Coruscant at her call. Nothing had been said, but then nothing had to be. Their expressions had been enough, and the sideways glances and muttered comments to each other as they'd headed back to their ships. They'd heard the story about Caroli letting Shada escape back at the Resonim Entertainment Complex, and it wasn't hard to guess that many of them were thinking she'd done the same thing here. Which had made it that much more important that she prove them wrong. And so she'd played a long-shot hunch, keying back on a vague connection between Card and Calrissian that Mazik had gotten whiff of a few years back. A hunch that had now paid off. Solo had been careful in that transmission, but that single oblique reference to Card had been all she'd needed. Shada was off with Card, and Calrissian was being asked to join in. And wherever he went, Caroli would be there too. Calrissian had once been a smuggler, and every smuggler, former or otherwise, had a hidey hole or two hidden aboard his personal ship. If Caroli could reach the Lady Luck even a couple of minutes ahead of Calrissian, odds were she could be snugged away out of sight by the time he started up the entry ramp. And if it turned out he was planning to use her hidey hole for something else, well, she would mark that target when she came to it. In the meantime, there was her carry pack to throw together, and a place on the next surface shuttle to reserve, preferably with a seat closer to the exit than Calrissian's. Waiting until the corridor outside was silent, she slipped out of the utility closet and headed at a fast walk back toward her room.
Admiral?
Captain Dorge's voice came from the comm speaker in the secondary command room's inner circle of repeater displays.
The Rurorian ambassador's shuttle has just cleared the ship and is heading back to the surface.
Handing his drink to Tierce, Flim flashed Deesra a smug smile and stepped over to the repeater displays.
Thank you, Captain, he said in that calm, measured Thrawn voice he did so well. Prepare a course for Bastion, and inform me when the ship is ready.
Yes, sir.
The comm unit clicked off. About time, Deesra growled, throwing a glare at Tierce. If you ask me, we've pushed our luck too hard here already.
We're familiar with your opinions on the topic, thank you,
Tierce said, not quite insubordinately as he handed Flim's drink back to him.
I'd remind you that 3 brand new treaties is a very good return for a week's work.
Only if Coruscant doesn't come down on us like a wounded rancor, Deesra countered sourly. You push them hard enough and long enough, and they will.
This hardly qualifies as pushing, Your Excellency, Flim said. His voice, too, was a little too close to insubordination for Deesra's taste. We haven't opened or provoked any hostilities, and we've gone only where we've been invited. On what possible grounds could Coruscant attack us?
How about the grounds that a state of war still exists between us? Deesra snapped. Either of you ever think of that?
Political suicide, Flim sniffed. We've been invited by these systems, remember? If Coruscant tries to stick its collective nose in...
He broke off as a shrill whistle sounded from the repeater displays.
What's that? He demanded.
Emergency battle alert,
Tyr said tightly. nearly splashing the rest of Flim's drink onto his pristine white uniform as he shouldered past the con man and dropped into the command chair.
"Admiral, get over here,"
he added, his hands darting over the controls. The tactical display came up, turning the room into a giant holographic combat display. And as it did so, the comm unit twittered.
"Admiral, I believe we're about to come under attack,"
Dorja's voice said calmly.
"8 Marauder-class corvettes have just jumped into the system, heading our direction."
Deesra consciously unclenched his teeth as he looked around the room for the flashing symbols that would mark the incoming marauders. Of course Dorja was calm. He thought he had the great Grand Admiral Thrawn aboard his ship, with matters undoubtedly under control. But he didn't, and they weren't. Unless Deesra did something fast, this whole tenuous soap bubble was going to blow up right in their faces. Flim was at Tirsa's side now, and the Major was reaching over the comm switch.
"Tell Dorja he's to take over," Deesra hissed toward them. "Tell him this is too small or too trivial for you to bother with."
"Shh," Tirsa hissed, cutting him off with a glare and chopping motion of his hand.
"Admiral?" "Ready," Flim said, and Tirsa tapped the key.
"Thank you, Captain,"
the con man said smoothly, and once again it was suddenly Grand Admiral Thrawn standing in the room.
"Have you identified them?"
"No, sir, not yet,"
Dorja said.
"They are random noise generators blanketing their engine IDs. Highly illegal, of course."
"Of course," Thrawn agreed. "Launch half a squadron of prey birds to intercept."
"Yes, sir."
Tears flipped off the comm unit.
"Are you crazy?" Deesra snarled. "A half squadron of starfighters against..."
"Calm down, Your Excellency," Flim said, throwing Deesra a coolly calculating look. "This was one of Thrawn's standard techniques to sniff out an unknown opponent's identity."
"More to the immediate point, it buys us time,"
Tears added, his fingers skating madly across the computer console.
"Marauder corvettes, Marauder corvettes. Here we go. Mostly used by the corporate sector these days, with a few in assorted Outer Rim system defense fleets."
"Interesting," Flim commented, leaning forward to read over his shoulder. "What would the corporate sector want with us?"
"I don't know,"
Tears said.
"Deesra, any ideas on that one?"
"No,"
Deesra said, pulling out his datapad. No, he didn't know why anyone in the corporate sector might want to attack them this way. But on the other hand, the mention of marauders had triggered a vague memory at the back of his mind.
"Do you have a list of the other systems who use them?" Flim asked.
"Running it now," Tears said. "Nothing really jumping out at me. There go the prey birds."
Deesra glanced up to see the marks indicating the starfighter speeding outward toward the distant intruders, then lowered his eyes to his datapad again. It had had something to do with Captain Zothib and the Kavrloo pirates, he remembered. There, that was the section.
"I need some suggestions here," Flim said urgently.
"Thrawn's standard pattern would be to let the prey birds begin to engage, then pull them back,"
Tears said.
"How the enemy responded to the probe was usually enough to let him figure out who they were."
"That's fine for Thrawn," Flim bit out apprehensively. "Unfortunately, we're a little short of his brand of genius at the moment. Unless Major Tears took classes in the technique with the Royal Guard," Deesra added, snapping the datapad closed with a grand sense of triumph.
"Helpful as always, Your Excellency,"
Tears said absently, still sifting through the computer records.
"Glad you appreciate me," Deesra said. "They're Diamala."
He had the satisfaction of watching both of them turn to look at him, a look of stunned surprise on Flim's face, the same surprise tinged with suspicion on Tirsa's.
"What?"
Flim asked.
"They're Diamala,"
Deesra repeated, enjoying the moment to the fullest. About 3 months ago, the Diamalan Commerce Ministry bought 12 Marauder corvettes to use in transport escort, and possibly for some rather shadier operations.
You sure? Flim asked, peering at the display. It doesn't show here.
I'm sure it doesn't, Deesra said. Captain Zoffit was trying to buy them and was outbidden. As I said, they may be reserving them for shady operations.
And how do you get from there to the assumption these are those ships? Flim demanded.
No, he's right.
Tears put in before Deesra could answer.
That Diamolan senator we dragged aboard the Relentless with Carissian, remember? I never did think he was wholly convinced you were Thrawn.
And if our intelligence reports are right, he was the one who helped drive the governmental split on Coruscant over the whole issue, Deesra reminded them.
Yes, he was,
Tears said, turning back to the computer keyboard.
It appears he decided to give us another test.
The question being, what do we do about it? Flim said, looking across the room. And the Preybirds are almost there.
I know,
Tears said, gazing at the computer display.
Call them back.
Already? Deesra frowned at the tactical. I thought you needed them to...
I don't need anything.
Tears cut him off.
Call them back, and have Dorja set up for a Tron-Boral maneuver.
A what? Deesra asked, frowning harder.
A somewhat esoteric battle technique, Flim explained, leaning over Tears's shoulder and tapping the comm unit back on.
That will do nicely, Captain, he said smoothly. Recall the Preybirds and prepare the Relentless for a Tron-Boral maneuver.
Acknowledged, Admiral,
Dorja said briskly.
Will you be joining me on the bridge?
Tears looked up at Flim and tapped a spot on the computer display.
You won't need my assistance, Thrawn assured the captain,
nodding acknowledgement to Tears and leaning closer to read the indicated section.
A Tron-Boral maneuver, followed by a full-closure Marg Sable sweep by the Preybirds, and I think our unknown assailants will reconsider their plans. Assuming they're still alive to do so, of course.
Yes, sir,
the captain said, and Deesra could almost see the other rubbing his hands together in anticipation.
Tron-Boral maneuver ready.
Execute, Captain.
Flim keyed off the comm unit again.
And that
should be that, he said, leaning casually on the back of the command chair and gazing with interest at the tactical display.
You see, we already have a battle plan to use against Diamala,
Tears explained, looking over at Deesra.
Thrawn tangled with them a few times during his sweep through the rebellion 10 years ago.
He gestured toward the computer.
All I had to do was pull up the record of one of those battles.
There they go, Flim interrupted him. Running like hop-skips. Deesra followed his pointing finger. Flim was right. The Marauders were indeed turning tail and heading for hyperspace.
But we haven't done anything yet,
he protested, feeling slightly bewildered.
Sure we have,
Tears said, his voice grimly satisfied.
Don't forget, they've got records of Thrawn's victories, too. The Relentless moved into a Tron-Boral maneuver, and that was all they needed to know.
Yes, Flim murmured as across the room the Marauder's marks winked out as they jumped to hyperspace.
With ships that weren't even registered to them, we responded with exactly the right move.
He tapped the comm again.
Secure for battle configuration, Captain, he instructed Dorja. And inform the Rurian governments that the threatened attack on their world has been frightened away.
At once, Admiral,
Dorja's voice came.
I'm sure they'll be pleased. Shall we continue course preparation for Bastion?
Yes,
the conman said.
You may leave the system when ready. I shall be meditating if you require me.
Yes, sir. Have a good rest, Admiral.
Flim keyed off.
And that, he added to Deeseran Tears, is indeed that. If the Diamala weren't convinced before, Five gets the Sabacc pot they are now.
Good for them, Deesra said sourly.
You realize, of course, that all this little exercise accomplished was to bring us one step closer to scaring Coruscant into coming down on us.
Patience, Your Excellency,
Tears said, keying off the tactical and getting up from the command chair.
I'm sure it also helped convince the Raurians they've chosen the winning side.
Yes, Deesra said. And perhaps brought us one step closer to the Hand of Thrawn.
Flim frowned.
The Hand of Thrawn? He asked cautiously. What's a Hand of Thrawn?
Tears pursed his lips, clearly annoyed.
Your Excellency.
What's a Hand of Thrawn?
Flim repeated.
No, go ahead,
Deesra said to Tears, waving a languid hand and preparing to enjoy this moment, too, to its fullest. Tears and Flim got along together far too well for his liking. It was about time they both got a taste of some of the misgivings and suspicions about this arrangement that Deesra himself had been feeling since it started.
It's your story. You tell him.
I'm listening,
Flim said, his voice suddenly dark.
What is this you haven't bothered to tell me?
Tears cleared his throat.
Calm down, Admiral,
he said.
It's like this.
It was, Deesra reflected later, a good thing that the secondary command room was totally soundproofed. As it was, with all the shouting, he completely missed the characteristic deck vibration that marked the Star Destroyer's return to hyperspace.
Chapter 10.
The first 100 meters were reasonably easy, even with R2's usual problems with uneven terrain. Mara had explored some of this section of the cave and had studied most of the rest with glow rod and macro binoculars, and she was able to pick out the best route. But at that point, the floor dropped off abruptly for perhaps 10 meters, and when they reached the chamber at the bottom of the passageway, they were in new territory.
How's it look?
Luke called to Mara as he used the Force to ease R2 over one last boulder at the foot of their descent path.
About like you'd expect,
Mara called back. She had her glow rod out in front of her, her body silhouetted as the light was scattered into a hazy nimbus by the dust in the air.
You know, just once it would be nice to go on one of these little jaunts where we didn't wind up having to drag that astromech droid through rocks and bushes and sand and all.
R2 beeped indignantly.
R2's usually done a good job of earning his keep, Luke reminded her,
brushing the grit off his hands as he stepped to her side.
Anyway, when did we have to pull him through sand? I'm sure we'll hit some sooner or later.
Mara gestured ahead.
What do you think?
Luke peered out through the haze. The chamber was short, no more than 15 meters from where they stood to the far end. But it was indeed a mess. A maze of rocks and boulders littered the area, with the jagged blades of stalactites and stalagmites jutting randomly from ceiling and floor, blocking their way. At the far end, the chamber closed down again to a narrow crack that looked barely wide enough to squeeze through.
Doesn't look too bad, he told her. We can handle the stalactites with our lightsabers. The big question's whether that crack's too narrow to get R2 through.
There was a rustling in the air, and Keeper of Promises fluttered to an upside-down perch on one of the stalactites.
Are you troubled, Master Walker of Sky?
The thought formed in Luke's mind.
Is the path ahead too difficult for you?
No path is too difficult for Jedi Skywalker.
Child of Winds jumped indignantly to Luke's defense, flapping his way to a rock beside Mara.
I have seen him do great deeds in the outside air.
Perhaps they were great in the easily dazzled eyes of a Quam Quay.
Splitter of Stones put in dryly from another stalactite a few meters into the chamber.
Those who have earned their names are more difficult to impress.
They're talking again, aren't they?
Mara muttered.
The Quam Cha are wondering if this chamber is going to be a problem for us, Luke told her. Child of Winds is defending us. Decent of him,
Mara said, unhooking her lightsaber and hefting it in her hand.
Shall we give them a little demonstration?
Luke frowned at her.
Are you sure you can... You mean, can I do it?
Mara cut him off.
Yes, I can do it. Just because I haven't graduated from your precious Jedi Academy doesn't mean I can't use the Force as well as anyone else. You want high or low?
I'll take high, Luke said, a little taken aback by the heat of her retort. He got his own lightsaber in hand and gave a quick look around the chamber, fixing the position of each stalactite firmly in his mind. You ready? In answer, Mara ignited her lightsaber, the light from its blade adding a blue tinge to the neutral white of her glow rod.
Anytime you are.
Right, Luke said, trying to hide his misgivings as he added the green of his lightsaber to the mix. Go. In unison, they cocked their arms and threw, sending their lightsabers windmilling across the chamber, their blades snicking neatly and efficiently through the protruding rock spikes. Or at least Luke's did. Mara's... She tried. She really did. Luke could sense it in her stance, in her outstretched hand, in the mental strain he could feel like a static discharge all around her. But as Master Yoda had once said,
do or do not. There is no try.
And in this case, as it had been then, there was indeed no try. Halfway across the chamber, Mara's lightsaber seemed to falter, its rhythm breaking and the blade tip dipping to carve shallow furrows in the rock floor. It would recover and fly true for another second or two, only to slow or dip again as she again nearly lost her force grip on it. Twice, Luke was tempted to reach out and help her. On such an easy task, he could handle both lightsabers without any problem. But both times, he resisted the temptation. Mara Jade, angry and frustrated, was bad enough. Mara Jade, angry, frustrated, and feeling like she was being patronized, was not a combination he felt ready to face. Besides, the job was getting done, if a bit erratically. And as far as the secondary purpose of the demonstration was concerned, the subtleties of the performance were completely lost on the audience. The confident squawks and chirps from Quam Ja filled Luke's ears and mind as the stalactites dropped from the ceiling around them to shatter on the rocks below. But neither the crash of rock nor the startled exclamations from the Quam Ja were able to drown out Child of Wind's delighted squeals.
I was right. You see, I was right. He is a great Jedi warrior, as is Mara Jade beside him.
Luke felt a twinge as he called his lightsaber back to him, timing it to arrive at the same time as Mara's slightly more sluggish weapon.
War doesn't make one great, Child of Winds,
he admonished the young Quam Quay gently as he closed down his lightsaber and returned it to its belt.
Battle is always to be the last resort of a Jedi.
I understand,
Child of Wind said, the tone of his thought making it clear that he did not, in fact, understand at all.
But when you destroy the Threateners...
We're not destroying anything, Luke insisted. At least not until we've tried talking to them first. I'd give it up if I were you,
Mara called over her shoulder as she picked her way across the chamber toward the narrow opening.
He'll understand after he's seen a couple of his friends die in battle. Not before.
Luke felt his throat tighten. Obi-Wan, Biggs, Dak. The list went on and on.
In that case, I hope he never understands, he murmured.
Oh, he will,
Mara assured him darkly, her voice echoing strangely as she leaned her head into the gap and waved her glow rod around.
Sooner or later, everyone does.
She leaned back out and unhooked her lightsaber.
You can come on ahead. There's only a short neck of extra rock here. Just take me a minute to cut it away.
Six hours later, Luke finally called a halt.
About time,
Mara said, wincing as she eased herself down into the most comfortable position possible on the cold rock.
I was starting to think you were hoping to make it all the way to the High Tower by tonight.
I wish we could,
Luke said, brushing some stones out of a saddle of rock across from her and sitting down. He didn't look nearly as tired or sore as she felt, she noticed with some resentment. She could only hope he was merely hiding it better than she was.
I have a feeling that we're running on a tight deadline with this.
You're always running tight deadlines,
Mara said, closing her eyes.
Has it ever occurred to you that every once in a while you could let someone else do all the work?
She felt the texture of his emotions change, and wondered whether his expression would be hurt, angry, or indignant when she opened her eyes. To her mild surprise, it was none of them. It was rather merely a look of calm interest.
You think I try to do too much?
Yes,
she said, eyeing him closely.
Why? You disagree?
He shrugged.
A year or two ago I would have, he said. Now, I don't know.
Ah,
Mara said. First, his statement back at the Kaverloo Pirates asteroid base that he was trying to cut back on his use of the Force, and now at least a tentative admission that he might be trying to do too much. This was progress indeed.
Of course, if you don't do everything, who will?
From his perch on a rock, Child of Wind said something, and Luke smiled.
No, Child of Winds. Not even a Jedi Master can do everything. In fact,
he threw an odd look at Mara.
Sometimes it seems that it's not the job of a Jedi Master to do anything.
Builder with Vines made a comment of his own.
Yes,
Luke said.
What did he say?
Mara asked.
He quoted what appears to be a Quamja proverb about how many vines woven together are stronger than the same number of vines used separately. I think there must be a variation of that one on practically every planet in the New Republic.
Mara threw a sour look at the Quamja.
You know, I used to be able to hear Palpatine's thoughts from anywhere in the Empire. I mean, anywhere. Core worlds, mid-rim, even a jaunt I took once to the edge of the Outer Rim.
And yet you can't hear the Quamja or Quam Quay from across the room, Luke said. Must be annoying.
Annoying isn't exactly the word I was hunting for,
Mara said acidly.
How come you can hear them and I can't? If it's not some professional Jedi secret.
His emotions remained unruffled.
Actually, that's exactly what it is. Not a secret, really, but the fact that you're not a Jedi.
What? Because I haven't been through your academy?
Mara scoffed.
Not at all, Luke said. There are ways to become a Jedi without going through an academy.
He hesitated just noticeably.
But as long as we're on the subject, why didn't you come back?
She studied his face, wondering if this was a subject she really wanted to get into right now.
I had better things to do,
she said instead.
I see,
Luke said. And this time she did sense a twitch in his emotions.
Such as flying all over the New Republic with Lando, for instance.
Well, well,
Morris said, arching her eyebrows slightly.
Do I detect a note of jealousy?
Once again, he surprised her. The flicker of emotion, rather than flaming to life like an ember in a breeze, faded instead into a sort of gentle sadness.
Not jealousy, he said quietly. Disappointment. I'd always hoped you would come back and complete your training. You didn't hope hard enough,
Morris said, forcing down a flicker of old bitterness of her own.
I thought that after all we'd been through together on Merkur and Wayland, I deserved at least a little special consideration from you. But every time I showed up, you said hello and then basically ignored me. Kip Duren or one of those other kids, they're the ones who got all your attention.
Luke winced.
You're right. I thought... I suppose I was thinking that you didn't need as much attention as they did. Kip was younger, more inexperienced.
He trailed off.
And see what it got you?
Mara couldn't resist pointing out.
He nearly wrecked the whole academy. Not to mention you and the New Republic and everything else that got in his way.
It wasn't all his fault, Luke said. The Sith Lord Exar Kun was driving him toward the dark side.
Do tell,
Mara said, aware that she was drifting straight back into territory she had already decided to avoid for the moment.
And whose idea was it to set up the academy at Yavin in the first place? And who decided to leave it there after that mess with Exar Kun was finally sorted out?
I did, Luke said, his eyes steady on her face. What are you getting at?
Mara grimaced. This was not the time or the place to get into this.
All I'm saying is that you're not infallible,
she said once again, deflecting the matter.
That by itself ought to be enough reason for you not to try to do it all yourself.
Hey, I'm not arguing,
Luke protested with a faint smile.
I'm a reformed person, really. I let you handle your own lightsaber back at that chamber, didn't I?
Thanks for reminding me,
Mara said, feeling her cheeks warming with embarrassment.
I really thought I had better control than that.
It's the long-sustained control that's often the hardest to master, Luke said. But I found some special techniques for that.
Here, lift up your lightsaber and I'll show you.
Shifting her hip to free the lightsaber, and to incidentally move her leg off a rock that was starting to become uncomfortably sharp, Mara lifted the weapon out in front of her.
You want it on?
She asked, getting a force grip on it and dropping her hand away.
No, that's not necessary, Luke said.
All right, now hold the lightsaber steady in front of you. I want you to keep an eye on it, but to also visualize it in your mind, just the way it's hovering there. Can you do that?
Mara half closed her eyes, her mind flashing back to their trek through the Wayland Forest 10 years ago. There, too, Luke had slipped easily into the role of teacher, with her taking the role of student. But a lot had changed since then. And this time, perhaps she would be the one who would be presenting the most important lesson.
Okay, I've got it,
she told him.
What next?
Mara was a quick study, as Luke had noted in the past, and easily picked up the rudiments of the focusing technique. He kept her practicing with it for another half hour, and then it was time to move on.
I hope your droid's not going to run out of power before we get there,
Mara commented as Luke used the force to lift R2 over yet another section of claw-slash ground.
I'd hate to think we dragged him all this way just so we could become a floor decoration.
He'll be all right, Luke said. He's not using much power right now. And your droid fitted him with some extra power packs on the way in.
Wait a second,
Mara said, frowning.
My droid slips? I thought you said you came by X-Wing.
We came down to the planet by X-Wing, yes, Luke said. But we came into the system in the Jade Spire. I guess I forgot to mention that.
I guess you did,
Mara said shortly, a flush of anger making Luke wince as it flowed through her emotions.
Who in blazes gave you permission? Oh, never mind. It was Tard, wasn't it?
He pointed out that your defender doesn't have a hyperdrive, Luke said, hearing the defensiveness in his voice.
Two people in an X-Wing cockpit gets pretty cozy. No, you're right,
Mara said reluctantly, and he could sense her forcing back her reflexive protectiveness toward the one thing in the universe she truly owned.
You just better have it well hidden out there. And I mean really well hidden.
It is, Luke assured her. I know how much that ship means to you.
You'd better not have scratched the paint either,
she warned.
I don't suppose you thought to bring the beckon call.
Actually, I did, Luke said, frowning slightly as he dug into one of the pockets of his jumpsuit. For some unknown reason, an old memory flashed back. The time he'd gone back to Dagobah and stumbled across an old beckon call from some pre-Clone Wars ship. He hadn't known what it was, but R2 had remembered seeing Lando once with a similar device. And so they'd headed to Lando's mining operation on the Klon to ask him about it. Arriving just in time, as it happened, to help Han and Leia fight off a raid by Grand Admiral Thrawn. But why should that particular memory come rising back now? Because Mara was here, and he'd seen his first vision of her at that same time? Or was it something about that ancient beckon call? Or the fire's beckon call? Or beckon calls in general that was triggering something deep in his mind? Mara was looking oddly at him.
Trouble?
She asked.
Stray thoughts,
Luke said, pulling out the beckon call and handing it to her. You're not going to be able to call the fire from here, though. We're way out of range, and I seem to remember the beckon call being strictly line of sight.
No, there's also a broadcast setting, Mara said. But the range is pretty limited. Still, there may be transmitters in the high tower I can run the call signal through.
She sent him one last glower on the subject.
Though you can bet I won't bring it out of hiding until and unless we can neutralize their nest of fighters. Speaking of which, you never told me what happened with the pair you ran into.
There's not much to tell, Luke said, unhooking his lightsaber and igniting it. A quick swipe, and yet another stalactite blocking their path went crashing to the ground in front of me. They told me to stay with them, then ran through a series of quick maneuvers. I thought at the time they might be looking for an excuse to open fire.
More likely wanted to see what kind of craft and pilot they were dealing with,
Mara suggested. That was the conclusion I ended up with, too, Luke agreed, stretching out with the force to lift R2 over the shattered stalactite. Anyway, they waited until we were a few kilometers from the high tower, and then opened fire. I ducked into that series of canyons your record showed and managed to lose them. Mara was silent a moment.
You said they told you to stay with them. They spoke basic?
Eventually, Luke said. But they started off with the same message you and Card picked up when that other ship buzzed by Booster Tarek's Star Destroyer.
Card gave you that, I take it,
Mara said, her emotions turning suddenly darker.
Did he give you the rest of it?
He gave me your landing data, Luke said. Was there more?
Yes, and none of it good,
Mara said.
Point one is that Thrawn's name is buried in that message. Point two is that your sister recovered a damaged data card near Mount Tantus that was labeled the Hand of Thrawn.
The Hand of Thrawn? I don't like the sound of that, Luke said.
No one else who's heard it does either,
Mara agreed grimly.
The question is, what does it mean?
You were called the Emperor's Hand, Luke reminded her. Could Thrawn have had that kind of agent?
That's the first thing everyone else has asked, too,
Mara said, and Luke sensed a brief flicker of annoyance from her.
That, or whether it could be a superweapon like another Death Star. But neither of those were really his style.
Luke snorted. No. His style was to rank or roll some brilliant strategy over everyone.
Succinctly put,
Mara said.
Still, the data card came out of the Emperor's private storehouse, so it must mean something. Palpatine wouldn't have created disinformation just for his own private amusement.
Well,
whatever it means. It would seem our friends in the High Tower are somehow connected to Thrawn, Luke said. I wonder if they could be a group of his people. Oh, there's a cheery thought,
Mara growled.
Let's just hope the whole species doesn't have the same tactical genius he did.
Yes, Luke murmured.
But even as he ignited his lightsaber to clear more of the rock from their path, another sobering thought occurred to him. If the Hand of Thrawn hadn't been an assassin or special agent... You're thinking again?
Mara cut into his musings.
Come on, let's have it. I was just thinking that maybe the Hand of Thrawn might have been a student, Luke said, turning to look at her. Someone he might have been grooming to take his place if anything happened to him. So where is he? Mara asked. I mean, it's been 10 years. Why hasn't he shown up before now? Maybe the Hand didn't think he was ready yet, Luke suggested. Maybe he thought he needed more time or training before he could take Thrawn's place. Or else, Mara said, and in the harshly shadowed light of the glow rods, her face was suddenly tight. He's been waiting for just the right moment to make his move. Luke took a deep breath, the cool cavern air tasting suddenly a little colder. Like the moment when the New Republic is poised to tear itself apart over the Kaa Maas issue. It's exactly how Thrawn would take advantage of the situation, Mara said. In fact, with Imperial resources whittled down to practically nothing, it's about the only thing he could do. For a long moment, they just looked at each other, neither speaking. I think, Mara said at last, we'd better get into that tower and see just what's going on up there. I think you're right, Luke said, turning his glow rod in the direction of their travel and boosting its power another notch. About 5 meters ahead, the passageway they were in seemed to open up into a large chamber. Large enough, at any rate, to swallow up the glow rod's beam. He took a step forward and paused as a subtle sensation tickled at the back of his mind. Somewhere up ahead. I've got it too, Mara muttered from behind him. Doesn't feel like my usual danger warnings, though. Maybe it's not all that dangerous, Luke said. At least, not to us.
R2 warbled, a sound that managed to be suspicious and forlorn at the same time.
He wasn't talking about you, Mara assured the droid. You see it, Luke?
Yes, Luke said, smiling tightly. Up ahead, their three Quamja guides, who up until now had ranged freely back and forth ahead of their slower ground-walking charges, had all taken up rock perches just this side of the cavern mouth.
I'd say there's something in there they're not anxious to run into. Which they seem to have forgotten to tell us about,
Mara pointed out.
Another test?
Could be, Luke said. No, Child of Winds, stay back here.
I see no danger,
the young Quam Quay protested. But he nevertheless obediently swooped to a landing on a stalagmite near the opening.
What is the danger?
We're about to find out, Luke told him, getting a grip on his lightsaber and easing toward the cavern. Mara?
Right behind you,
she said.
Want me to handle the lights?
Please, Luke said, handing his glow rod over his shoulder to her. Stretching out with all his senses,